Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is S. Didwania, CEO of Workzone.
Throwing money at a problem is, it can get you short-term results. It may not get you long-term sustainability, right? And so again, one of the theses here was because we want to grow in a sustainable fashion while also improving our EBITDA margins, in some ways that acted as a forcing function, which is despite the fact that we were profitable, we did not want to just tap into the profit pool and start deploying investments before identifying levers of growth that already existed.
This is Ash. He took the helm of Workzone in December 2023, after the company was acquired by Big Ben Software. Despite being profitable with a sticky customer base, long-tenured employees, and a must-have product, Workzone had been experiencing a six-year decline in revenue. Instead of the typical turnaround approach of immediate disruption, Ash took a counterintuitive path. Learning first, focusing on existing strength, and engaging deeply with customers before making changes. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Ash to my podcast. We explore what it takes to reverse a multi-year revenue decline while maintaining 40% plus EBITDA margins in a highly commoditized market. Ash shares how he challenged the conventional wisdom about business turnarounds by taking a path few would dare to follow. His counterintuitive approach transformed not only the company's financial trajectory, but also reshaped how the entire team viewed their mission, their customers, and their path to growth. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how to turn around a declining SaaS business without sacrificing profitability or disrupting what works. Secondly, why deep customer understanding can be more valuable than new feature development. Thirdly, how to create organizational focus through a single metric that aligns every team member. And lastly, the power of planning for multiple contingencies, plan A, B, C, and D, in sales and go-to-market. Well, hi, Ash. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Well, I mean, I've been looking forward to this. I spotted you a couple of weeks ago on LinkedIn, and instantly got intrigued, first of all, because of the industry that you're in, because I got a passion for project-intensive industries and companies that actually do something for that industry, but also because of the remarkable effects that you've been achieving in the last year, turning a business around. So had to invite you for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. So before we dive into the journey that you've been through since December 23 with Workzone, a little bit about you. What drives you? What do you get energy from?
Yeah, that's a great question. What drives me the most is this whole act of unlocking potential with people, products, businesses, right? And what I mean by that is unlocking potential involves three things, in my view. One is vision setting. Second is laser sharp focus on execution. And third is problem solving. So the whole act of going from vision to execution while overcoming hurdles and spotting and identifying opportunities, like that is deeply motivating for me and a big part of what I've done in the last decade and a half so far.
Yeah. I think we are very alike because currently working on an offer for one of my customers, and I was looking at my letter and my logo and what's on it, and on the last line is unlocking your potential, which I came up with 7 years ago.
That's awesome.
So that has always been sort of ingrained in what I also stand for. And I completely agree with you. The order is indeed vision, execution, laser sharp execution, and problem solving, because there's always something else that will go differently.
Yeah.
All right. So you became the CEO of a company called WorkZone in December 23. That company, as you call it on LinkedIn, is a 20-year-old startup. So it's been around for a while. And the reason why you became the CEO was not because it was going so well. It was actually going not so well. So it's actually a turnaround project. So let's dive into that. First, a little bit about WorkZone itself. What is the big idea behind the company? What is the problem that it solves?
Yeah. So there's a tactical response and there's a more strategic response to it. On the surface, it's a project management software for marketing operations and PMO teams. Basically helps teams get work done in a very simple way. But the big focus as part of that piece is what we call critical industries, right? So critical industries are industries that form the backbone of our communities. So think education, healthcare, financial services, nonprofits, right? Those industries without which you and I cannot survive. And so the big vision behind WorkZone is how do we leverage technology to elevate these critical industries by making it easy for team members to get work done in an efficient and effective manner, wherein the end outcomes are things that impact communities. For example, with universities, it's driving strong student outcomes. With hospitals, it's driving strong patient outcomes. And so I feel that's where the whole purpose of WorkZone comes to life, which is these are the industries we have focused on for the past 20 years, over 20 years now. And that's what drives our folks, which is how can we make a broader impact on human beings out there through the use of technology, if that makes sense.
Interesting. So how is this different than, I mean, I hear a radical difference between project management software for example, engineering or for construction.
Yeah,
I think that is far more towards the asset and the materials, where yours is much more towards people. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. It's all about simplifying the day-to-day for people we work with, especially in these teams that I mentioned.
Nice. Okay. So tell me a little bit about the 22-year history, the focus on the critical industries like you just described. Product has been around for a while. And the company has sustained over 22 years, but what you wrote in your LinkedIn email that in the last 6 years, there was a downward trend in MRR. So then you come in and you have the task, fix it. What was the first thing you did to get an idea about what the next big, what the plan would be?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me say, when the business was acquired, WorkZone was acquired by Big Band Software, which is a holding company that acquires B2B SaaS businesses that are profitable. And then the goal is to grow them sustainably over a period of time. So when the business was acquired, it was a pretty stable business, right? So the customer base was sticky. The average customer lifetime is 7 years, which is unheard of in the B2B SaaS space, right?
Yep.
Long tenured employees, average employee tenure of 9 years, right? A product that was a must-have for teams, right? So not a good-to-have solution, a must-have solution. And then fourth, but equally important, a very profitable business, right? So the company had a lot of things going in its favor. What was missing was top-line growth. And that's what I wrote about on LinkedIn, which is it's a very commoditized space. Like, there are hundreds of PM tools out there, right? And so at some point in such commoditized industries, every company goes through a phase where, you know, they're dealing with fundamental challenges. And in WorkZone's case, it was more on the top line because everything else was working pretty well. And so to your question, our thought process coming in after the acquisition was, how can we identify the strengths of the business and really try and double down on those strengths? And what I found up front was four key pillars which we could work off. One was customers, because I said it had a very sticky customer base. Second was the product, a very stable, solid product, which is seen as a must-have. Third were the people, great group of very passionate people who knew a lot about the industry, about our customers. And fourth was financial health, very profitable business, right?
Yeah.
And our thought process was, let's begin with the people component. That's people and customers both. And so the first thing we did was really reached out to our customers to understand what's your experience with WorkZone, what's working well, what's not working well. We spent almost 500 hours last year.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
Right? Just trying to get customer feedback. And a lot of what we learned in that process, we quickly deployed that on the product, right? And that's what I feel things started to improve on the top line, because customers could see value from what they were sharing with us being translated into things on the platform they could now use to get work done.
Funny, because the company has been around for 22 years. You would almost expect you've got every feature on the planet that needs to be around. Customers are sticky, so they actually see that as well. So what was then that fundamental thing that was still missing for the revenue to go up?
Yeah, I think it's to your point, like we had a whole bunch of things on the platform that you would expect with any PM platform.
Yeah.
Right? But the world is evolving at such a rapid pace, right? Where user expectations, they change over weeks, not months, not years, right? And so what we found was two things. One is the pace of user expectations changing had gone up dramatically in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And second was we found that a lot of our customers could benefit from a better understanding of what was already on the platform.
Uh-huh.
So, right? So in some ways, it became a two-pronged exercise. Let's understand what they need. And then based on those insights, let's break them into two parts. What are those pieces that are already on the platform that we can do a better job educating them on?
Yep.
And second is, what are those missing pieces which we could build, which would be equally beneficial for our ideal customer profile?
Yeah.
So once we started doing those two things, we started seeing things like more and more customers upgrading to the higher tiers, because we had a bunch of things on the enterprise plan that they wanted and they needed, right?
Exactly.
Or they started bringing on board more team members, additional teams on the platform, which grew upsell. Yep. To give you a stat, 50% of our customers last year grew in revenue. Right? So that's half the customer base spending more with WorkZone over the course of 12 months. And you would think there's some secret sauce behind it, but there is none, which is it was the basic act of understanding customer needs and making sure they were aware of what we had and what we could build on top of that.
Yeah, it's low-hanging fruit. It's the hidden growth levers, as you call it also, which is a phrase that I love because I use it myself all the time. Everything is typically always already in place, especially when your company has been there for a while. It's just acknowledging it, finding it, and making it go again.
Yeah, I feel like with acquisitions, there is always a default tendency to come in and disrupt things up front, because we just believe coming in that, you know what, nothing must be working well. So let's start making changes. In our case, and I'll give a lot of credit to Big Band Software for this, like just that whole philosophy of a holding company model. I remember speaking with them before taking on the job and asking them, what do you think is required? And the first thing they said was, do not try to disrupt things before learning what's in there, right? Yeah. And I feel like that's what we try to kind of hold ourselves accountable to, which is let's first come on board, learn more about the strengths of the businesses. Let's uncover hidden strengths. And let's first try and double down on those strengths before we invest in new things.
Yeah, exactly.
And in hindsight, like that approach got us traction, not just from a short-term perspective, but increased customer confidence, increased confidence within the team itself, which is, you know, these folks are here to do business in a very logical, thoughtful manner. And it just led to a bout of motivation where on one hand, they were seeing our revenue go up and they were feeling taken care of, right? Which I think is equally important in a turnaround gig, which is you have to take care of the people.
Exactly, because there's so much fear about what does it mean to me, what does it mean to my family, and so on. Good, very good point. So I hear two things, or actually I hear one thing is that the biggest bang for the buck, talking about sort of making the link to the company that acquired, was with install base rather than new business. Have you also seen, based on what you've done, a surge in starting to win more new business?
Yes. Goes back to customer feedback again. Something we tried to do at the beginning of the year, after the company was acquired in December of 23. And so almost right away, we started clearly defining who our ICP was, ideal customer profile. Right. And based on that, we really honed in on the critical industries where we said that we do not want to be everything to everyone. Instead, let's just focus on these few industries. And so what that meant on the sales side was our pitch was refined to clearly communicate how are we a great fit for these industries and for this ICP, right? And the moment we shifted away from trying to do demand gen with multiple industries now towards those industries that we understood well, we started seeing improved conversion rates, a thicker pipeline, and just faster sales cycles, right? So
I
did
see it all
we
the time.
Yeah, right. So it's like, did we fundamentally shift something? No. What we did do was we just refined how we approach sales. And so yes, sales again also grew for the first time in 6 years last year.
Well, the good thing at the end as well, and that is maybe most impressive, because a lot of companies always think, okay, if you grow, you throw money at it. But that was one of the constraints, you know, even though the company was pretty healthy EBITDA-wise or profit-wise. Profit shouldn't go down, you know? So what you did is you grew, you turned it around into growth again, remaining a 40 plus percent EBITDA margin, which is unheard of. I mean, this is really high.
Yeah, and that's also learning from my prior roles. I worked at a mix of companies, Fortune 500, VC-backed companies, scale-up startups, right? And something I realized over a period of time is throwing money at a problem is it can get you short-term results. It may not get you long-term sustainability,
Exactly.
right? And so again, one of the thesis here was because we want to grow in a sustainable fashion while also improving our EBITDA margins. In some ways, that acted as a forcing function, which is despite the fact that we were profitable, we did not want to just tap into the profit pool and start deploying investments before identifying levers of growth that already existed. Right. So what that meant was two things happened. Our EBITDA grew as well last year, along with revenue. But then we were able to upskill across the organization. We were able to make product improvements without spending a lot of money on them because we knew exactly what customers wanted. Then we just coupled that with clarity of responsibilities for the team, which then also meant they were very focused on what needed to be done without having too many distractions and too many initiatives to deal with, if that makes sense.
Let me make a small interruption here. Ash just made an excellent remark that sets his approach apart from standard turnaround playbooks. The realization is not about deploying investments before seeing results, but identifying growth levers that already exist within the business. That change not only leads to immediate revenue improvement, but also builds team confidence and motivation that accelerates transformation. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. In this case, it's the intense focus on their ideal customer profiles in critical industries rather than pursuing any revenue opportunity. Secondly, they offer something valuable and desirable. And in this case, for Ash, it means deeply understanding existing customer needs instead of chasing market trends. And lastly, they aim to be different, not just better. And for Ash, this meant taking a human-centric approach in critical industries where relationships matter more than features. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it goes back to your point at the beginning, defining the vision and then execution with laser focus. And then, of course, your redefinition of the ICP, really honing it into the companies that have become your biggest fans and will remain your biggest fans, that creates the clarity and the focus for everybody. Like you say, you know, you understand this already well. Those customers will not come with crazy feature requests. Implementations will go fast. It just becomes a machine full of energy because everybody is doing if what they do has the biggest possible impact because it was designed that way.
Yeah,
I like that. To your point also, in that growth was, of course, in a market that was already very dense in terms of competitors. You say over 100 products with very large competitors that spend millions and millions. That's the thing to do. It's but I book a remarkable effect. It's typically it's ticking a number of boxes or number of traits that I define. The first one in my book is acknowledge you cannot please everyone. And the second one is offer something valuable and desirable. And I think that's also comes together what you've been doing and aim to be different, not better. And the different part is also what I hear between the lines. So kudos for that. What I also see in one of your posts is not only defining the vision was an important thing, but also the transparency that you've put across. At some point, you make a point about overarching goal for 2024 was return to revenue growth. And that was the single slide that every time in meetings came up. Tell me a little bit about that. What did that do?
Yeah, so this is, again, no rocket science. But human beings tend to perform their best when they know exactly what to focus on. And there are a finite number of priorities. Right. In WorkZone's case, when the acquisition happened, our single biggest goal for the first year was let's find a way to grow this company again. Right. And we were very transparent with the team on day one, which is that's our biggest objective for 24. But it's one thing to say things. It's a whole different ballgame to have people see that come to life in real time. Right. And so the way we started the whole transition process was by being very transparent with the team in terms of what was working well, what had to be improved, and what were the top 2 to 3 metrics that we would really focus on to assess progress.
Yeah.
And at the top of that list was revenue, or in our case, MRR, right? And so the first thing we did was we showed the team basically what MRR looked like in the last 6 years, last 5 years. Right. It was a bit of a decline. And then we almost created this hypothetical end of the year mark. Like obviously that was a revenue goal. And we charted the path from the point at which we acquired the business towards where it could be end of the year. So it's like this, this V curve of sorts, where the past 5 years are the left hand of the left side of the V. And then the aspiration is the right side of the V. And every single all hands, we would pull up that one slide and plot where we were on the MRR for that week on that V curve. And 3 months in, people clearly started seeing how that V was beginning to evolve, right? The right side just kept going up gradually, slowly, but still going up. And it just led to this increased confidence and motivation, which is, you know what, we decided we want to get back to revenue growth, and now we can see it happen in real time on a weekly basis.
That's true.
So I feel like more than the impact on the actual numbers, it had a bigger impact on the confidence and motivation levels of the team members.
Have you seen that teams that maybe initially were all focused on their silo, their department, started to work together because together they could create a bigger outcome?
Yeah. I think it's true for all businesses, including ours. Right, when you are moving at a certain pace, it's easy for siloed work streams to develop. And so one of the things we did up front when after the acquisition again was we deployed something called EOS, Entrepreneurial Operating System.
Yeah.
Right. It's a set of frameworks and guidelines which help companies get organized in ways which make it far more collaborative. And so in our case, the first thing we did was for every single department, it was very clear what the vision was for the organization, what we wanted to achieve through the course of the next 12 months, and how each of them played a role in that, right? Second, what we also did was we created what we call interdepartmental SLAs, service level agreements, which is here's how marketing can benefit sales. Here's how sales can benefit CS, product, so on and so forth. And so it created a culture of cross accountability across the organization where people were not only aware of what other departments were working on, but they were equally responsible to make sure they were doing their bit to help those departments succeed. Right. And so by default, we had common projects happening where success was being measured on how both teams or multiple teams were contributing towards that project. And then that's one thing, but the other part was rewarding them for the collaboration. And so every all hands, you know, we had these shout outs where we not only acknowledge people for their individual contributions, we also acknowledge them for their teamwork, which is specific examples of how a certain individual is helping other departments succeed. And gradually that led to a culture of celebrating cross-departmental wins, which again sounds very vague on paper, but when it comes to life, it has a very different impact in terms of just the level of collaboration and the synergy that it drives in terms of shared outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. It stops the finger pointing and it creates a feeling of belonging and that we're in this together. Shared goal, but meaningful for people, and they can see how they can actually contribute to that. Let me see. There's a couple of things I want to move into. I've got so many questions still to ask. But one thing was also that you started talking about, okay, so we have this plan. We wanted to get the growth back. But you said the art was also to have not only a plan A, but also a plan B and a plan C, to be two steps ahead. Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, a great example is sales, right? So trying to grow revenue, potentially upsells, seeing upsells as a strong lever of growth, but also being aware that upsells alone may not drive the growth that's required.
Yeah.
And so, which means we have to, in parallel, ramp up our sales engine, our marketing engine, right? Specific to sales, we live in a world where sales the way it was done 2 years ago is not effective anymore, right? And of course, there is a lot of talk around AI and how that's disrupted go-to-market in general.
Yeah.
But there are just multiple channels and multiple ways of growing, which is great, but it also comes with a distraction, which is it's very easy to lose focus.
Yeah.
And so in our case, we came up with a simple sales playbook, or at least the beginnings of a playbook, which was, let's again start with what do we think our strengths are. We had a sales team in place, and what we said was, let's begin with outbound, right? We all know that outbound rates have gone down dramatically in the last 2 years, conversion rates have gone down. And so the plan B was, if outbound does not work, then can we in parallel build out our inbound engine where, you know, we are putting content out there. They're trying to capture demand by showing up in places where people are looking for platforms like these, right? That was plan B.
Yeah.
And then plan C was, let's assume that upsells, outbound, inbound, none of these work. What happens next, right? And that's when we went back to our customers and we were like, you know, where do you find folks like us? Simple question, right? But where do you find folks like us? What channels should we pursue?
Yeah.
And the response we got was, you know, we attend conferences a lot. We find new platforms at trade shows, at conferences. Are you in those events? And we were like, no, we are not. And so plan D was, let's create some budget.
Yeah.
So we can actually show up at these conferences and start engaging with our prospects and customers.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it went from, we have one plan in place, and if it doesn't work out, we'll figure out what to do. So now it's like a cascading effect. Plan A in place, 1 month in, what are the numbers saying? Okay, plan A is not working. Let's go to plan B while trying to refine plan A, so on and so forth. And so right now where we are at this point, we have our outbound motion, we have our upsell motion, we have the inbound motion, we are attending conferences. They are all happening in parallel and they are much more evolved than where they were 12 months ago.
Exactly. Yeah, at the end, you know, you're in the sales, what I call the sales-led SaaS business. It's not that you need thousands of new customers per year to have a great year. So yeah, the whole at scale thing that AI made possible, and yeah, like you said, it disrupted, but in a negative way, the whole market, the noise. You go about it by going indeed to the logical places again, where people are. Makes
I think
complete sense.
it's also important to keep in mind who the audience is, right? So again, we serve critical industries. These industries are all about human beings. They appreciate human interactions. And so ways for us to show up as human beings in front of them. And that's been helpful.
Exactly. That builds trust, you know? Suddenly there's a face behind the email that people, yeah, then will pick up because then now they know you. To the point also, you didn't fire people for what I've seen, but you want to get more out of people in order to scale the business. So I think you also one of the things you said, one of the traps you wanted to avoid is to start hiring because of you want to start scaling. So what have you done in order to what you call maximize the potential of every person in the team?
Great question. EOS has this very simple framework that's aimed at bringing the best out of people. And there are three parts to it. The first part is what they call get it, want it, capacity to do it. Second piece is right people in the right seats. And third piece is core values, right? So it all begins with this notion that if you have the right people in the right seats doing the right jobs, they are able to put their skills to the best possible use and drive outcomes that they can best deliver, right? And so for us, it started with a simple exercise, whereas for every single individual across the organization, we asked us, do they get it? Like, do they understand what the responsibilities for this role are? Do they want it? Do they wake up every single day in the morning feeling inspired and motivated to do that job? And third is, do they have the capacity, which is, do they have the time, skills, knowledge, professional development to be able to do that job? Right? So that kind of created a grid of sorts for us for every single individual. And we found instances where we had great talent on staff, but maybe not in the right seats. And so we put them in the right seats. Right. So a great example would be we had a director of training and support. He'd been with WorkZone for 10 years, and he had worked with the former CEO to get a really strong understanding of the product, where he would contribute towards product discussions. And I was like, is what's more motivating to you? Is it what you're doing right now, or is it leading the product? And he said, leading the product. And it just so turned out we were looking for a head of product anyway. And so we were like, you know what, let's connect the dots there and get going. Like, that's an example. And it's been 12 months and it's been doing wonderfully well, right?
Yeah, it's the whole notion of the internal mobility. And also, once you start doing that and people see it, they also start to have a lot of confidence in the business that they will get the opportunity, you know, and that it's done for the right thing. Which brings me to another point that I saw in your post, in one of your posts, because I've seen many. Typically, when you see business have been acquired and it has to start growing, and EBITDA is a measure, and you think about, you know, it's going to be a tough culture. But you see the complete opposite. It's like, and actually, you make a point about it. Lead with humility, with respect for the macro, and lead with empathy, which is exactly the opposite of what you would expect in a turnaround business. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, and this has been, I feel, an area of growth for me, in full transparency. A piece of feedback I've received in my prior roles is, in the pursuit of speed and outcomes, I've had a tendency of not focusing too much on the empathy piece. And so at the beginning of this role, that's one goal I'd set for myself, which is I want to make changes to that. Right? And what that really meant in our case was on day one, and I remember my day one, 14th of December, 23, we had this all hands where I was supposed to get introduced. And then we had to talk a bit about what the way forward looks like. And my very first objective was leading with that empathy. What that meant was addressing head on the concerns that people would likely have, which is, no one's getting fired on day one. We are not here to disrupt things. Our very first objective is to learn. I'm an outsider day one coming in. I have no clue about the strength of the businesses, right? So my very first goal over the next 3 months is to learn. Learn from the team, learn from customers. What's working well? What's not working well? How can we support you better? Right? And reiterating that message in every single all hands, which is the objective right now is to learn. And so the first thing I did was set up one-on-ones with the entire company, not just my direct reports, the entire company, and ask them simple questions like, how do you feel in this moment? Like, what impact has this acquisition made on you?
Yeah.
What fears do you have? And also making it very clear, I'm not here to judge you. I'm just here to learn and understand, right? And then based on those conversations, I saw a few themes cropping up. Of course, there was inherent fear of people losing their jobs. Instead, what we did was for each one of those individuals, we were like, here are things you seem to be good at, right? So why don't we focus on that first? Let's focus on what are you good at? Here are the goals for the year. How do you think you can make a difference towards these goals? And people automatically started raising their hands and being like, you know what, here's how I can help. And so very quickly, the focus shifted away from I may get fired to here's how I'm helping this business grow.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And every all hands, we would have people share what they learned and what they were working on and what the outcomes was. And then soon it became a culture of the focus shifting towards a more progressive mindset where I was, again, trying to be empathetic all along and repeating myself again and again, which is I'm here to help you. I have your back. I have your back. Mm-hmm. Just keep saying that. I have your back. Right.
Yeah.
And it just led to a culture where, which was far more open. And I felt in hindsight, we were able to move at a much faster pace. We were because we were somehow able to get rid of that perception and the fear.
Exactly. Yeah. It creates velocity rather than people, sort of disconnecting. Yeah. Exactly. What has been the hardest nut to crack in this journey for you? Is there one thing that was extremely hard, but at the end you conquered?
There are so many things. It's difficult to point to one. I still say we are in the early phases of the transition journey, right? We are still in the process. But it really was the go-to-market part of the engine, right? Like when you're seeing revenue decline for 6 years, you are inheriting a team and you are inheriting certain skill sets. And seems like there is no clear path forward, right? The obvious question that comes to mind is, so what now? And there are two options, which is, okay, let me bring on board people who have done this before, or as I said, let's find ways to uncover strengths. So I feel like for us, the fact that we were able to drive upsells and hence revenue by working with customers in a very authentic, very transparent, very partnership Yeah. oriented manner versus a vendor relationship, like that piece took time. It didn't happen overnight.
Of course.
It took us a good 3-4 months till we started seeing some results emerge from that. And keep in mind, we were still seeing, on one hand, we were seeing revenue coming in, but we were still seeing a bit of churn happening, right? So the whole act of making sure that the revenue coming in was more than the revenue going away, going out on a weekly basis, yeah. It's tough, right? And yeah. So I feel like that's one piece we have made some strong progress in is bringing in some level of predictability and some level of growth. But as I said, it continues to be an ongoing journey where we still have to do a lot of work to crack our go-to-market or demand gen engine. And that's what's top of mind for us right now.
Yeah. Talking about that churn, because I mean, nobody likes churn, but sometimes it can also be sort of a blessing that the wrong customers go away. Was that the case, or was it also that the right customers didn't have faith?
It's a mix. It's a mix. And we were intentional about this as well, right? So a few months in, when we were very clear about our ICP, we started using language like critical industries. And we clearly started calling out, you know, what industries we are going to focus on. It obviously raised questions. So what happens to us if you are not part of those industries?
Yeah.
And you won't believe this, but I had conversations with customers who were like, you know, I run a software development team in the tech space. Based on your new vision, it doesn't look like we are a focus for you. And I was very transparent, leading to the question, which is, do you see value with the platform right now? And they were like, yes, we do, but we need all these things. And I was like, you know what? I'll be very honest with you, which is what you're expecting from the platform may not be the biggest area of focus for us. Here are some alternatives that you could look at, which is in some way the competitors, right?
Exactly.
Here are some alternatives you could look at. We would love to support you if you're seeing value with what we have. But if your aspiration is to see a lot more that would help you in your role, we may not be the best fit. So yes, we did lose some customers who of course understood that we may not be the best fit, but I think it was important for us to be transparent in that front as well. And that's fine, because now what we have is a customer base which is very aligned with our vision. We know that they're working towards that customer base.
That is such an important statement to make, and it's leading by doing at the end. It not only tells a very strong story to your existing customers that might be in the wrong spot, but also the ones who are in the right spot. It tells a very important message also internally. Salespeople will also start to think, wait a minute, now I should say goodbye to those prospects as well, to focus on the right ones, and everybody will have an effect on. So it's a matter of time, and you have to go through a dip, but at the end, you will come out so much stronger. I see this all the time. So kudos for... because a lot of people, I actually wrote a post about this morning. A lot of SaaS companies say they're focused, but at the end, when someone comes with a credit card, they'll take it.
And
that's the wrong approach.
I feel like this goes back to what I said a while ago, a few minutes ago, core values, right?
Yeah.
So core values for any business or for most businesses are seen as a bunch of words that maybe sit on a website. Yeah. Or they are part of the company overview deck, right? But may not have come to life internally. So as part of our transition, one of the first things we did was we created a core set of values. And what we meant by that was these are the guiding principles that would govern how we show up on our day-to-day basis.
Mm.
And the very first core value in there was be customer obsessed, right? What that meant is in real life, if we have customers who we believe will see value from the platform, how can we serve them to the best of the ability? But if there are customers who we have who may not be a great fit for our platform, it was equally important to be transparent with them,
yeah.
Right? And, and then we did that across the board. The sales team, the CS team, obviously there were questions up front, which is you are putting things on the line out there in terms of revenue. But in those moments, it's important to take a very clear stand, which is, yes, we understand the drawback of doing that, but it's beneficial for those customers in the long term.
Exactly. Because you'll never make them a fan anyway. They're always going to be moaning.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, in our case, we are very fortunate. We have a fairly large customer base, a very loyal customer base, people who've been with us for 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah, for a reason.
Right. So the idea is that culture of customer obsession in some ways is already built in.
Mm-hmm.
And we know if we can do a good job taking care of those customers, the business will grow. And so we may see a short-term dip in revenue here and there, but we will more than make up for it over the long term.
And that's the word. You will make up for it in bigger amounts. What has been the most counterintuitive lesson that you've learned over this year to actually start scaling the business?
I think I have a tendency of underestimating the challenges,
uh-huh.
Right? And it goes back to something I mentioned on LinkedIn a few weeks ago, where success at times breeds overconfidence, right? And so success from prior roles meant I came in with almost this mindset of I could grow anything, right? Not saying I was being arrogant, but there was definitely a tinge of overconfidence in there. And I realized very soon that this journey will be different from my prior roles, as is every journey, but this one will be specifically different because the goal was not just to grow revenue, but the goal was also to grow it in a sustainable fashion while growing profits, right?
Yeah.
And so just the whole notion of growing top line and bottom line while dealing with the turnaround situation.
Yeah.
it's not something I'd done extensively before. I'd done bits and pieces of them in different situations.
Lucky for you.
Right. Yeah. But the combination is not something I'd done before. No. And so there were just many more challenges to deal with. If top line was working well, there were issues with the bottom line. If bottom line was working well, there were issues with the top line, so on and so forth.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
You still have a business that's trying to go through a transition where you have people who obviously have concerns and questions. You have customers, a wide area of customers, right? You have your vision. Yeah. So there are just multiple balls you're dealing with at any point of time. Yeah. And what I learned the hard way is in all of this complexity, the ability to simplify complexity by focusing on fewer things at one time, being very transparent with yourself, the customers, and the team in terms of what's working well, where do I not have the answers so you can help me with the answers, right? And getting the team laser focused on what the one thing that they need to focus on, like that was helpful. But yeah, it was far harder than what I thought it would be at the beginning of the stint.
There's no shortcuts, as I say. And there's always things that pop up that you couldn't even imagine coming. But for example, on those moments where you, for example, had conflicting priorities, do you have a method to go through that and make the tough calls? Because there must have been a number of tough calls.
Yeah, this goes back to EOS again. I just love EOS in so many different ways. EOS has this concept of rocks.
Yeah.
So rocks are a finite set of measurable 90-day goals, right? So you set these rocks at the beginning of the quarter. The most important piece is they've got to be finite, meaning anywhere between 3 to 7 rocks, not more than that, at the company level or at the department level.
Yeah.
And what that means is even if distractions come up in the course of the quarter, the first question we ask ourselves is this new thing, this new shiny object, is that going to help the rocks or no? If the answer is no, we put that on the side burner for now, so we can continue focusing on those finite set of priorities.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there will be situations where there's a fire going on somewhere and you have to get in and address that, because without that, it could impact you in dramatic ways. Like there are, of course, situations like those all the time. But even this act of questioning ourselves, which is this the most important thing to do? Because if we do that, we'll have to compromise on our rocks. Like that act of questioning ourselves itself takes away so many items that may feel urgent but are not important.
Exactly. Yeah. Very strong point. Completely agree. In the line of that, you talked about the EOS a couple of times now. What is a key metric that you stopped tracking that you initially thought was crucial?
The beauty of SaaS is you can measure a lot of things. The challenge with SaaS is you can measure a lot of things that don't matter.
Yeah.
So at one point of time, we had a list of almost 95 metrics that we were tracking across the business, right? Yeah. And many of those metrics were lagging indicators, not leading indicators. What I mean by that is MRR is a lagging indicator. A leading indicator is a pipeline conversion rate, ACV, right? So we just did that lagging indicator, leading indicator exercise for a bunch of metrics. We kept a few lagging indicators like revenue, EBITDA, because they are important to understand the health of the business. But then we mostly focused on the leading indicators. And that meant we got rid of a lot of lagging indicators, which were not really moving the needle. So to your question, is there one metric? No, there were over a couple of dozen metrics that we stopped tracking. But then,
can you give an example of a couple?
For example, we had a metric called CSAT.
Yeah.
So customer satisfaction score. The concept makes sense, but it was very subjective in terms of the way it was being tracked. And so what we said is let's replace that with a more objective set of metrics. So we brought in the concept of MAU, monthly active users, daily active users, combined with NPS. Right. And so we got rid of CSAT, but we replaced that with a metric that actually showed what was happening on the platform and how that was reflecting in user experience. And we did that for our accounts at the account level, as well as at the user level. So that's one example that comes to mind right away. And then there were a bunch of financial metrics, even on the go-to-market side, like we were tracking a bunch of metrics. SaaS, like SaaS GTM, as you know, I'm sure is full of metrics, right? So there were just a whole bunch of GTM metrics, which were important in the long term, but not really meaningful in that moment. LTV CAC is one example that comes to mind.
Yeah.
We replaced LTV CAC with CAC payback period. That just felt like a more relevant metric in our context, right?
Yeah.
We were tracking CAC, we still track CAC, it's important, but we broke it down by cohorts, right? So it's those refinements and replacements that were very helpful.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about making it relevant for your business. Looking at the time, two more things. One of the controversial things you said on LinkedIn, B2B, as it's known today, will be dead in 2 years, and AI is not going to be the root cause. And then, long story short, after your post, which was a very interesting one, the attempts to modernize platforms too will be dead if you're building it in a vacuum. And I think that comes back to your shift towards building with customers. You've been around for 22 years, but you clearly don't see that as the end because, yeah, the platform, of course, is not built as you would build it today. So how do you go about it?
Yeah. First of all, I was not trying to make it controversial. But yes, I firmly believe it's not just true for WorkZone. I think it's true for any B2B SaaS business today. Just the pace at which user expectations are evolving. And I feel like technology is an enabler. It's the means to the end. It's not the end. So while we have all these shifts happening with AI, I feel that's less important. It's more of understanding what do customers really want? Like, what are the biggest pain points? And how can we create solutions by collaborating with them versus in a silo? So what that post was referring to was, let's not go out there and build AI solutions because it's all the hype right now and do that in a silo. Because what that would mean is when you take it to market, you will soon learn that you've built something that's looking for a problem.
Exactly.
Right? Instead, what if we work backwards from the business problem, from the customer's pain points, and then assess if something like an AI can help us expedite the solution to that problem or come up with a solution which is way beyond what would be expected without AI, and then do that in collaboration with customers. So, for example, we have a customer advisory board.
Yeah.
Right. Every single item that we build on the platform goes through a very thorough customer feedback exercise, which includes all the way from defining the use case, expected system behavior, what's missing, what works well, what's distracting with this new feature launch. Like, we go through a very thorough exercise with customers.
Yeah.
And so what comes out of it is a solution which could be built on AI, but it's really helping customers solve for the biggest pain points in the easiest manner possible. So that's the long story short, which is let's use technology. Today it's AI, tomorrow could be quantum computing. But let's use these technologies, collaborate with customers, and really focus on the problem that needs to be solved instead of using technology to create solutions which may not even have a problem.
Exactly. Well said. I mean, I 100% align with that. It's the only way to create something meaningful and something that actually customers are going to talk about, which is going back to my book, The Remarkable Effect. Build something that they will, that it's not about you to judge whether this is cool. It's for them to say, this is valuable for me. This makes a difference. Thanks so much for sharing all this wisdom. It's been a masterclass almost. And like a look in the kitchen of your company that you've transformed over the last, 14 months. Where can people go to find out more about WorkZone or to say hi to you?
Yeah, WorkZone.com, that's where we are. Ash@WorkZone.com, that's my email.
Yep.
I'm always open to looking forward to new ideas, learning new things. So if there are folks in your audience space who have their own wisdom to share or would benefit from anything that I've heard on this podcast, more than happy to connect, more than happy to spend time. But it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure connecting with you, Tan.
Okay.
Really enjoy this conversation and wish you all the very best. And hopefully you keep doing these awesome conversations.
I will, definitely, because that's keeping me going. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Take care.
And this ends my conversation with Ash. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Ash Didwania, CEO of WorkZone. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.